Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to 3GT, where three guys sit around and record their musings on various topics. Sometimes we speak of things that may be controversial. Sometimes we speak of things that may be banal in some people's minds. Other times we talk about deep and really thought-provoking topics. I hope that is one of these today. I am joined by Pastor Kyle Borg. I won't make him the butt of any jokes today. We are glad to be joined by Kyle and the president and Professor Barry York. I am Scott Hunt, the lowly parishioner of the three. But today we are going to talk about another holiday, as it were, a day set apart by Rome for veneration of a saint. Although I would tell you that I did some research on this, and it is not required now. It is permitted to venerate Saint Valentine on February 14th. And so we're going to talk about St. Valentine or St. Valentine's Day, or whether or not we should venerate that good saint who I understand was martyred long ago. But we are going to talk about what it means to be masculine, and really how this ties into Valentine's Day is what it means to be masculine, and I think how we can show that masculinity and are in love to our wives. So really quick, if you are still listening, I just want to give a quick definition of what masculinity is. And this is not a scientific definition. This is a Google definition. That's what I like to do. You know, the secret is when you don't know something in the law, the first thing you do is you Google it. And I'm telling you the absolute truth. As a lawyer, I Google things more than I do get into books, just to make sure I know what I'm talking about. So masculinity is defined as the attributes, behaviors, and rules associated with boys and men. And perhaps we are displaying too much of that masculinity by virtue of just having three guys on this podcast and not allowing a feminine voice, as it were, to interject. Though one could argue that based on the incessant posting on Instagram of photographs, Kyle may fulfill that role. I jest with Kyle. We were talking after a previous episode that Barry has posted no pictures on Instagram. I've posted twice. And Kyle, how many have you posted?
Irrelevant to the topic at hand. I understand. Almost 800.
There you go.
Almost 800. So Kyle is our sensitive one of the three. But I want to ask you.
You know what color shirt he's wearing too right now? Did you notice that? He's got a pink shirt on.
It's red. The light is not. It looks pink, but it's red. It's very red.
Sure, salmon, Kyle. Sure, right? Kyle.
I knew we were recording on about Valentine's Day, so I'm wearing my red.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the problems is, like with many things, is Christians have the ability to take something and run with it way too far. And I think we've seen this with the idea of masculinity. And maybe I'll ask you to, where have you seen this idea of masculinity taken to a way extreme?
Well, I think in the Reform camp, there has been a desire to recover masculinity because of the feminist movement we've seen in our culture over the last several decades. But often what has happened is, and this is very typical, that when there's something going on in the culture, that the church reacts, and that times there can be an overreaction. And so we see in some quarters of the church that masculinity is really defined I think, by hormone than theology. So you get, of course, one of the figures that sadly has had a downfall in recent years is Mark Driscoll. He was a very popular minister out in Seattle, and got really a lot of young men excited about Reformed theology. So there was that. But in so doing, he also promoted certain views of sexuality, relationships between a husband and wife, the way he ran his church, on and on, where it really came across as Christian bullying, in my opinion. So you've seen that. There's also certain teachings out there on the family that really stressed so strongly the role of the husband and father that it really begins to venture into the realm of a little dictator or tyrant in the home. So you see those kinds of things going on, the patriarchal movement, even some of the books on dating and how dating relationships are to be done, or actually shouldn't be done, but courting. And so there's this heavy-handed masculinity that's been promoted out there in some segments of the church, not limited to the Reformed camp, but even in the evangelical world. And so I think that's part of what we're wanting to speak about today.
Yeah, there's been, as Barry said, within the Reformed camp, there's been a patriarchy movement that I think, personally, I would never want to identify with. You already mentioned Mark Driscoll, and there's still a very small, soft place in my heart at times for Mark Driscoll, but I do think, by and large, he really promoted a more of a machoism than anything else that is not necessarily biblical. I think, and I might get myself in trouble with a few people here, but some of what's coming out of Moscow, Idaho, with Doug Wilson mm-hmm. and his ilk, I think is sometimes, as you said, Barry, more interested in hormones. That's what you said. than a biblical picture of true masculinity. And whether or not Doug Wilson himself is guilty of that, or some of his hot-headed followers, there's stuff coming out of there that really, I think, needs to be read with a discerning and cautious eye.
And to be fair, there is kind of a reaction against this anti-masculinity that's going on in popular culture today. Gillette, I don't know if you're aware of this, has started this campaign about mm-hmm. razors and shaving. And, you know, there is an attack on this idea of masculinity, be it rightly or wrongly defined, but that we need to be on guard about as well, that, there is nothing wrong with masculinity, I would like to think.
You just triggered me.
Well, there is nothing wrong with femininity, but there is something wrong with feminism, and this hormone-driven machoism, I think. So the question, I think that we, was that appropriate, hormone-driven machoism, where if you can grow a beard and chew tobacco without spitting, you are more of a man and a macho than yeah. others? I probably, give up where I live in that state.
but really, really, Scott, to emphasize that in some people's minds, even in Reformed camps, that is what is being sold as masculinity. You know, you've got to grow a beard and you've got to use tobacco products. And, you know, I heard a very popular podcast that I think goes a little too far on this masculinity, where they said, you know what, if you don't drink beer, you must be gay. to basically put across the idea that it's an effeminate trait not to drink beer, and you don't want to be effeminate, therefore you need to drink beer. And, you know, they all sit there and they laugh about it and everybody, oh, ha, ha, ha. But the problem is it is betraying this unbiblical idea of what masculinity is, that it's summed up in how big my beard can be and how much, you know, how I smoke a pipe or I smoke a cigar and that makes me a man, or because I'm able to drink a pint of beer. And that's an attitude we've got to guard so much against, because it's just unbiblical.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that kind of begs the question then, obviously we know where we need to go to determine what true masculinity is, and that's to the Bible. So let me ask you, what are some of the places you go to find out and to get an idea, a definition of what being a true man is?
I'm thankful
a real man, as I should say.
Yes, I'm thankful years ago for the ministry of Ken Smith, and he wrote a little book, a little Bible study called Learning to Be a Man. He said later that he wished he had titled it maybe something else, because he was concerned guys wouldn't want to be carrying that book around. you wouldn't want to be seen with Learning to Be a Man. But it was actually
Manhood for Dummies.
Yeah, it's actually was a good study. But one of the things he stresses in the book is we have a good definition of manhood in the 128th Psalm, where it talks about blessed is the man who fears the Lord and walks in his ways, and that true biblical manhood really starts there, that we have to be in right relationship with the one who made us and the one who directs us on how we are to go. And then it goes on in that psalm to talk about if he's walking with the Lord and he's fearing the Lord. And then it begins to address his family, it addresses his work, it addresses his relationship to the people of God. And so it's so important to have that blessing of true biblical manhood on us, but it really starts with fearing the one who made us.
Which I think is so important. You know, Barry, you talked about Psalm 128. I think my mind immediately went to those opening chapters of Proverbs. I'm not saying that there are not things there applicable to women, but it's so interesting that the opening chapters of Proverbs are a father instructing his son on what it means to be a man, and that it's the pursuit of wisdom. It's the fear of God. It is a life that is pursuing purity and rejecting folly and foolishness, you know, and that's imaged so graphically for us in Proverbs chapter 7 with the adulterous woman whose house only leads to the grave, and what it means to be a young man who pursues this idea of biblical masculinity. It's found in being wise. It's found in striving for purity. It's found in shunning foolishness and the things that lead to death. And you know, you think about that for young men and what that means to be a young man who's pursuing God. When I think of biblical masculinity and I think of fathers, I think again of those opening chapters of Proverbs, what it means to be a biblical father, to fulfill that role is to instruct your children. The Apostle Paul makes an allusion to that in 1 Thessalonians when he says, you know, we were like a father among you because we taught and exhorted you. You know, that's what biblical manhood is being a father in the way that God has called you to do, to raise your children in the fear and the admonition of the Lord. And so, you know, biblical manhood in those ways, that those are some of the things that I begin to think of.
And I think those are great starting points for men. One of the things that you both mentioned when talking about some of the modern problems with maybe the patriarchalism, some of what Mark Driscoll was speaking about, was this idea of how men treated their families, and particularly their wives. I think there's this concept that to be masculine means that you have to lord it over your children, your wives. They become somehow your servants. How do we respond to somebody who thinks that being masculine means that you do just that? You know, your wife is subservient to you. She gets you, you know, your pipe and your slippers every morning, and so you can sit and read the newspaper. How do we respond to that? Where do we look to see how a man is truly to treat his wife and family in a real practical
way. I'm completely fine with my children serving me just in an effort to be transparent.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm not sure I can answer that question because my wife lays my clothes out for me every morning.
Question withdrawn, I guess. You know, no,
Does she lay your stocking hat out every morning too?
Yes. But honestly, my guess is that's done more out of love and compassion for you than out of you demanding it from her.
Yeah, she.
It's or to save her from embarrassment from being seen.
That's right. It's yes, an act of mercy on her part because she knows I'm helpless at matching my ties and things. But in all seriousness, I think that we need to go back to the biblical commands and what they're stressing, how they're directed. I think of Ephesians 5, where you know a lot of men go there to say, look, it says, wives, be submissive to your husbands and everything. And it does say that there in Ephesians 5, verse 24. But I always like to point out that that's a command that's directed to the wives. And as you're alluding to, that this is a command where a wife with a regenerated heart wanting to honor and follow the Lord voluntarily gives herself in submission to her husband. And that's a precious treasure that a woman would be willing to put herself under the wing of her husband. And the way that that should then work itself out is the husband should not be so concerned about the command directed to the wife, but really what he's told to do in the next verse and in that whole passage, really, where husbands are told to love their wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So to really be a biblical man is to be a man living in a loving relationship with his wife, where he's sacrificing his own interests and his own ways in order to care, provide, protect his wife. He's giving himself up for her, and that she really knows that that's the posture and attitude of his life and heart toward her. I find that men who are humble and who really care, love, nurture, protect their wives. Going back to Psalm 128 for a moment, the wife is described there as a vine, abounding with fruit. And a vine has to be carefully tended and protected and nurtured in order to produce the fruit. Elsewhere in the scriptures, women are described like gardens, such as in the Song of Solomon. And gardens have to be tended, gardens have to be protected. And so for a woman to really prosper in a marriage requires true biblical masculinity, where the husband's going to provide those things for her. He's going to protect her, nurture her, care for her, honor her, rather than going around with a heavy hand saying, I demand that you submit to me. I've found that when men start living the way that God intends them to live, then they often will find a woman is willing to follow that lead.
Yeah, I to bring this to the Valentine's theme about masculinity expressed in marriage, I think, Barry, you're right to point out Ephesians 5, and I think it's so pivotal. Husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. I remember when I was a newlywed, I was out on a hike with one of my friends. He was a single guy at the time, but he began asking me about marriage, you know, what do you like about it? And I had these very romantic ideas, even as a newlywed, and I still have them 12 years into our marriage. But I expressed to him, I said, you know, I really hope I'm given the opportunity someday to die for my wife. And he's like, well, what do you mean by that? It's like, oh, I mean, like, take a bullet, take a knife, do something that where I literally die for my wife. There's something very romantic. There's something very grand in that to me. And I remember that he was sitting there smiling and nodding. And then he said something that I will never forget. And there was so much wisdom in it. And he said, well, Kyle, that's great to want to die for your wife in that level. But can I ask you, have you learned what it is to die to her every single day? And to die to her in the little things. And, you know, and that resonated with me. And I think there's something profoundly biblical about that. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. We tend to think of the giving up of Christ as that culminating act on the cross. And there is a centrality to that. There is an importance to that. But that was not the moment wherein he began to give himself up for his church. Christ gave himself up for his church from the very moment of his conception, when he humbled himself and took the form of a servant, and when he was born of Mary, and when he began to suffer even from the earliest age. You know, there, he was born in a stable. There was no room for him in an inn. That's part of the marked suffering and humiliation of Jesus Christ. And what you see throughout his life is that at every step of the way, Christ is giving himself for his church. And that does culminate in that great life-giving sacrifice on Calvary's Hill. But I think Paul is being more broad. We're not simply to think of that moment. We're not to exclude it, but we are not simply to think about it. Everything that Christ did to sanctify his church, to cleanse his church with the washing of the water of the word, everything he continues to do in order to present his church without spot or wrinkle, that defines this idea of what Christ has given up for the sake of his church. And Paul is saying, husbands, that's what you are to do. Every step of the way, you are to be giving yourself for the sake of your wife. And I think, you know, that's contrary to a worldly idea of masculinity. But that, to me, really expresses what masculinity looks like in the context of marriage. It is to love your wife as Christ has loved the church. And there's we could go on. There's just a beautiful, Christ has demonstrated so beautifully what that love looks like. It's an infinite love. It's a very purposeful love, a very intentional love, a love that guards and protects and seeks out what is best. So I think we need to understand that is a masculine expression of what God wants from us as husbands.
I appreciate you getting into the Valentine's Day topic even before I had to bring it up, because that's where I was going is where I wanted to go is Christ giving himself up for his church, and which is the true form of masculinity. And I don't think that, Kyle, you're wrong in saying you want to die for your wife someday now. It might be a little bit, you know, like to think I would be willing to die for my wife, but to want to do it, being stabbed or shot in some romantic, you know, movie type of way. I don't know that I long for that.
I reminded my wife a couple of weeks ago that if the cruise ship sinks, I'll put her on a lifeboat and I'll go down with the ship. But she reminded me that cruise ships now have enough room in all the lifeboats for every passenger, and that would be very unnecessary. So.
And that's, I'm glad that is unnecessary. We'll talk about cruise ships another time and certain people's disdain for cruise ships, but we won't go there today. But I guess, what are some real ways that we can apply Christ giving himself up for the church to men? What are some ways that you can encourage men to be like Christ in that way, to be manly in that way? And give themselves up for their wives. And I want to take this a step farther, because we have listeners that are probably not married, men who want to be manly men, godly men, I would say. And how can we demonstrate this kind of Christian masculinity even before we're married, when we don't have a wife, when we don't have children? It's kind of several questions in one, but, you know, I'd like your thoughts on that.
One thing that comes to mind, Scott, is that, again, so many men think masculinity has to do with the expression of our maleness as seen in doing rugged things, whether it's involvement in sports or hunting or fishing or whatever it may be, that they really, cars. I've just seen men often giving themselves, you know, we talk about men just are big boys with their toys. And so often I find men will be devoted to a hobby, to giving large amounts of time to some form of recreation, and they're neglecting their wives in the process. And as much fun as those things can be, and there's nothing wrong with having hobbies, we got to really make sure that we're giving as much energy and devotion to our wives. So to me, as Kyle was talking about, just this whole idea of dying daily, we do have to look at our schedules every day and each week, each month, and what are we investing in? Are we trying to become a better player in some sporting event, or are we trying to really become a better husband? And I think when a wife sees her husband really desiring to be with her and to do things with her and spend time with her, to communicate with her, then I think he is expressing biblical masculinity and in the form of love in a way that his wife can appreciate. So that's just one thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, I think, especially to those who are unmarried, and we've kind of talked a little bit about that with Psalm 128, what does a godly man look like? Pursuing wisdom, Proverbs 7, pursuing purity, fear of the Lord, things like that. But maybe one of the things as single men might be preparing for marriage, hoping for marriage, and there's nothing wrong with that. Statistically, 99% of all people in America get married, and I think that's God's ordinary providence for us is to be married. So I just want to be very clear, if you're single, it's not a bad thing to desire to be married. But one of the things to begin cultivating, or some of the things to begin cultivating, we've talked about Ephesians 5, but the Apostle Peter in 1 Peter 3 talks about how men need to learn, husbands need to live with their wives in an understanding way, that they are the weaker, he says in 1 Peter 3, verse 7, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. There's already a way to begin to understand and appreciate a biblical teaching on the distinction between men and women. And to begin understanding that even as a single man, I think would ultimately help very much in marriage. I grew up in a family with all boys. I didn't understand girls at all. Rachel just laughs. I was clueless as to so much, even just habits and routines of women were lost to me. But there's a way to begin as a single man to begin to understand the biblical teaching on these things. And also, I think a very robust study for husbands and single men alike, a very robust study of the biblical idea of love. 1 Corinthians 13 is often read at weddings. Well, it's not first and foremost. Marriage is not what is in Paul's mind first and foremost when he wrote 1 Corinthians 13. Nevertheless, that is the love that will also characterize marriage, love that is patient and kind and does not envy and boast and is not arrogant and rude and self-seeking. Those are habits, those are graces that you can begin to cultivate by the grace of the Spirit, which will help then in marriage to love. And the Apostle Peter, 1 Peter 4:8, love covers a multitude of sins. To grow in grace is one of the best ways to prepare in that way for what we've been talking about in marriage.
I appreciate those thoughts and those words. I think oftentimes this idea of masculinity gets defined, gets thought about apart from the Word of God. And I think that even there are times when we take our idea of masculinity and try to make Christ fit that. So I think it's very important for us to go back to the Word, to look at Christ and get our definition from Him and His Word, and not take this American idea of masculinity or whatever culture, whatever idea of masculinity, and then place that on Christ, because I think that is what has happened. I know Driscoll has said some pretty, and I know you have a soft spot for him, Kyle, but he has said some pretty obnoxious things about serving I couldn't serve a Jesus that I could beat right up. Well, Jesus willingly gave himself up. He was beat up Mr. Driscoll, or, you know, and that's the Jesus I serve. And he did that for you. So I think it's so vitally important that, that we go to the word to find out what it means to be a man. And perhaps there will be less toxicity associated with this concept of masculinity. We are running out of time. I did want to give the other hosts an opportunity to make any kind of closing remarks before we depart for the evening.
Well, just following up.
Have you said your piece?
Well, not yet.
Okay.
Well, I just wanted to follow up one of the things you're saying there with respect to going to the scriptures to learn what it means to be a man. I think part of that also is then, again, within the context of marriage and family, is that we have a responsibility and a duty to not only go there ourselves, but to make sure that our family's going there, that they're being raised in the fear and nurture of the Lord, that we're taking, you know, again, a good part of some of this reformed masculinity is there's a renewed interest among many young men in theology, and that's great. Study the theology. But make sure that it's forming your behaviors in proper ways to be humble. But also, don't think that theology is just the realm of men. we are three guys theologizing, but I theologize with my wife all the time, talking about things of doctrine and scripture with her. And she just was very recently, even yesterday, reading me something that she had read. And so we're to be having theological formation, not only among men, but it's really our desire that both men and women and children, I should say, grow in the fear and knowledge of the Lord through good theology.
Well, with that, I think we will bring this episode to a close. We thank you for joining us. We would encourage you to correspond with us either through Facebook, through email. We love getting feedback from our listeners. And so with that, we do bid you a good day, and we trust the Lord will be with you.